It is a delight as well as a great privilege to be able to speak the Word of God this evening, or on any occasion, really. Grateful for everyone's presence, for your attention, and for your songs of encouragement to me and to one another, to each other, really. All of us are encouraging one another to be more faithful and to think more on spiritual things. If you'll turn over to Matthew chapter 24, we'll be taking our lesson from this passage this evening. In Matthew chapter 24 and verse 1, it says, "And Jesus went out from the temple and was going on his way, and his disciples came to him to show him the buildings of the temple. But he answered and said unto them, See ye not all these things? Verily I say unto you, there shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down." In verse 3, "And as he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came unto him privately, saying, Tell us, when shall these things be? And what shall be the sign of thy coming and of the end of the world?" When you look at this beginning to the chapter 24 of Matthew, there's a context that is set that helps us to understand this passage. When you look at this passage in the parallel accounts in Mark and Luke, you find that there are a lot of figurative statements, a lot of figurative language, a lot of things which people will be confused over and apply to different things. Some will apply it to premillennialism. And as we go through, we'll try to hit on some of those things that people do that with. But they'll try to apply it to the coming of Christ for an earthly reign that's going to be imminent real soon. Others, they're confused about, well, what judgment is this talking about? Is this final judgment or some other thing? And we're going to try to understand, according to the context, what exactly is being discussed. First of all, we note in verses 1 and 2 that Jesus had gone out from the temple. That's important because the disciples were showing him this magnificent temple of Herod, this beautiful building, and they were very impressed with it, obviously. But Jesus in verse 2 said, "See ye not all these things? Don't you see all this? Not one stone will remain on another. It will all be torn down." He was trying to get them to de-emphasize the physical temple because, as you remember in John chapter 4, Jesus said that the Jews were worshiping correctly according to the old law, but the time now is when it's not going to be in a temple that you do this, but you worship in spirit and truth. So this physical temple was passing away. Its time was past. And Christ has come to establish a new way. And in verse 3, three questions are posed by the disciples that throughout chapter 24, Jesus answers. Notice again in chapter 24, verse 3, "As he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came unto him privately, saying," first question, "Tell us, when shall these things be?" Well, what? What's the when and what's the what? When shall the temple be destroyed? That's what he mentioned to them. All those stones torn down. What shall be the sign of thy coming? They knew he would be the one behind it. But what's the sign? What's the indication of when you're going to do this? And notice what else they connected with the fall of the temple. And of the end of the world. They connected the end of everything with the fall of the temple. They couldn't imagine going past that. And yet Jesus is going to break this apart and answer these questions each in turn when we look at Matthew chapter 24. So we're going to look effectively at two judgments, giving away the point, two judgments this evening in the context of Matthew 24. Because the disciples have confused the fall of Jerusalem, the judgment upon Jerusalem, with the end of the world. They've tied them together in their questions. Jesus is then going to break it apart and address the fall of Jerusalem. Then he's going to switch and address the end of the world. They're separate. They're not one and the same. Now, as we look in this context, we see that Jesus first addressed their first question. When shall these things be? When shall the temple be destroyed? Looking at verse 3, let's start from there.
He says in verse 3, "And he sat on the Mount of Olives. The disciples came unto him privately, saying, Tell us, when shall these things be, and what shall be the sign of thy coming and of the end of the world? And Jesus answered and said unto them, Take heed that no man lead you astray, for many shall come in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and shall lead many astray. And ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that ye be not troubled, for these things must needs come to pass. But the end is not yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and earthquakes in diverse places. But all these things are the beginning of travail. Then shall they deliver you up unto tribulation, and shall kill you, and ye shall be hated of all the nations for my name's sake. Then shall many stumble, and shall deliver up one another, and shall hate one another. And many false prophets shall arise, and lead many astray. And because of iniquity shall be multiplied, the love of many shall wax cold. But he that endureth to the end, the same shall be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in the whole world for a testimony unto all the nations. And then shall come the end." Now, as we look at this context, we've already kind of hit on what things are being discussed. The destruction of the temple is specifically what is identified in verses 1 and 2. As we go on in this context, Jesus begins to warn them about false teachers and false messages, those claiming to be serving the Lord and presenting themselves as spokesmen of God. But he basically warns them against these kinds of things. He also warns them of wars and rumors of wars. Now, if you've ever heard that expression, as I have, talking to the premillennialists, they're not talking about the fall of Jerusalem. People who use that phrase today say, well, you see all these wars today and rumors of wars and all those things. That's the end of the times coming, and you better get ready. Christ is going to come and set up his earthly kingdom. Every time something happens in the Middle East, every time somebody somewhere says that. Jehovah's Witness, that seems to be their mantra. That's their constant chat. You know, 9 times out of 10, when they come knocking on your door, they're there to talk about some terrible thing, the famines and earthquakes and all these terrible things going on, and they want to take these kinds of statements and apply it to Christ coming in the future. But in the context, we've already seen Jesus is talking about the fall of the temple at Jerusalem. Not his judgment upon the world in general, but the fall of Jerusalem, judgment upon Jerusalem. And so beware of false warnings. That was true for the apostles. When you talk about in the first century, you can read how there were various conflicts and various uprisings. The Jews, being subject to the Romans, didn't really like that. And the Romans didn't like the Jews very much. They would do things one to another to spite one another, to anger one another. All the various rulers, like Pontius Pilate, at times would do things to throw things in the face of the Jews, and then they would retaliate. And there was also a faction of the Jews called Zealots, who at various times would rise up and in arms, literally, to combat the Romans. And even in 66, there was one of the emperors who came against Jerusalem and camped about it for a time and then withdrew. And so there's all these various things happening and conflicts and things being stirred up. But that's not yet the end. That's not yet the fall of Jerusalem. As we know, it took place in 70 A.D. But when we look at history, there were a lot of conflicts, a lot of things going on through this period causing unrest and concern. And so, rumors, warnings, false warnings rather, don't give heed to everything you hear, Jesus says. And that could be applied today. The principle would be valid today when people try to say that kind of thing of, oh, that indicates the end of the world. Well, there's always been wars. There's always been famines. There's always been earthquakes. And that's going to keep going on as long as this old earth keeps going. Somewhere, somebody's going to be fighting. Somebody's going to be hungry. All these things go on. And people try to use that to stir up attention. But notice in the context of Matthew 24, when shall these things be? Well, Jesus goes on in this context to tell them it's going to be after certain things. Certain things must be done before these things that he's talking about take place. We saw in verse 9,
In verse 9, he says, "Then shall they deliver you up unto tribulation, and shall kill you, and you shall be hated of all the nations for my name's sake." Here he's speaking to his disciples. And they would be hated. They would be persecuted of all the nations. Now, what does that indicate? That indicates that they've gone out further than the land of Judea. They've gone out into the other nations and begun working for the cause of Christ. So this is obviously talking about the work of the apostles. During that time, these things are going to be taking place. And that's going to happen before the end comes. We also see in Acts chapter 4, Acts chapter 5, Acts chapter 12, Acts chapter 21 through 28, we see the various cases where the apostles were persecuted, both in Judea and then Paul over as far as Rome in a foreign country. And so these conflicts we can see partially recorded there in the book of Acts. We also see in 24 verse 10, he says, "Then shall many stumble and shall deliver up one another and shall hate one another." So here is how desperate these times would become. People would be falling away, even betraying one another. Even to the point of, as we mentioned, these false prophets and false teachers. In verse 11, it says, "And many false prophets shall arise and lead many astray. And because iniquity shall be multiplied, the love of many shall wax cold." And so here is a time of people turning away, forsaking, and trying to act like they didn't know anything about this way that is right. They're going a different way. And notice this. This one I think is especially clear in verse 14. "And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in the whole world for a testimony unto all the nations, and then shall the end come." So here's the list of things that must take place before the end comes, and the last one in the list I think is very easy to pinpoint. Of all of these, it's the easiest, because Colossians 1:13, what does that say? Colossians 1 and 13 and verse 23. I think I just confused myself. But over, is it 23? Okay, well, I had it right. Colossians 1 and 23 says that the gospel which you heard, which was preached in all creation under heaven, whereof I, Paul, was made a minister. And here the book of Colossians was written in 61 A.D. Within 30 years of the death, burial, and resurrection of Christ, the gospel had been preached to the known world. The Roman Empire and all the nations there that it covered and controlled had at least been contacted with the gospel. And so we see that this list was taking place in the first century. And we see the timetable then. It's after these things that the fall of the temple and the fall, destruction of Jerusalem would take place. We also see that second question. When shall be, or what shall be, the sign of thy coming? And people want to know when there's some prediction or some indication of an end of something. People are curious. That's natural. The disciples, when Jesus said, "These all are going to come tumbling down. There's not going to be one stone upon another." Well, that was a natural question. Well, when? What's going to be an indication of this is going, that this is going to happen? Well, Jesus goes on to answer that. And he says in verse 15, using the same words, When therefore you see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken of through Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, let him that readeth understand. Let them that are in Judea flee unto the mountains, and let him that is in the housetop not go down to take out the things that are in his house. And let him that is in the field not return back to take his cloak. Now just to pausing right there, Jesus, as he's answering the when of these events, he says there's going to be this abomination of desolation. This thing that you can see coming that's going to defile and desecrate. Well, what exactly is that? Well, Daniel chapter 9 and verse 27 predicted a time when there would be this abomination, this desolation that would come and defile the holy place. And we see that prophecy back there, and it was fulfilled when the Roman Empire came and stepped its unclean Gentile feet into the temple, desecrated it, even set up idols in place, a temple of Jupiter, in place of the temple. So when you look at that, they defiled it in the worst way possible, setting up idolatry in its place. And we also see in Luke chapter 21, if I can get my books right this evening, Luke chapter 21 and in verse 20, it says, "But when you see Jerusalem compassed with armies, then know that her desolation is at hand." Then he goes on to warn about them in Judea needing to flee, down in verse 24 of Luke 21. It says, "And they shall fall by the edge of the sword, and shall be led captive into all the nations, and Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled." So Luke is very plain in recording what exactly is Jesus talking about here. He's talking about the Gentiles coming in and defiling and ruining Jerusalem and taking these people captive into all the nations. And so we see the application made very plainly in this context. The holy place defiled. We see the warning again both in Luke and in Matthew about those in Judea needing to flee into the mountains. Well, if this is the final coming, or if this is some premillennial coming, what good would fleeing do? If you're taken, you're taken. If you're not taken, you're left behind, right? What good's it going to do? If Christ's coming is a miraculous sense, what good does it do to flee? And why only Judah? But in this context, he's talking about judgment upon Jerusalem, and if you're in that area, the Romans are coming with their armies. And you want to get out of there. You don't want to stay because they're not happy with the people in that area. Get out. That's his warning to them. Judeans need to flee. He goes on in Matthew 24, down in verse 19. "But woe unto them that are with child, and to them that give suck in those days, those that are pregnant or have newborns." Well, if this is the final judgment, what difference is it going to make if you have a baby or not? Or if this is, as we have the premillennialist saying, this coming of Christ in this premillennial concept, what difference is it going to make if you have a child or not? But if this is a physical army upon physical Jerusalem, then if you have a child, we can understand. It makes a difference, because if you have a newborn or you're pregnant, it makes it hard to do what he's just told them to do. Flee. Run away. He goes on in this context. Verse 20, "And pray ye that your flight be not in the winter, neither on the Sabbath." End of the world. If it's the end of the world, what difference is it going to make what day of the week it is? If it's the end of the world, that's it. Sabbath or not. Winter or summer. But if it's a physical army and winter's here, it's going to be hard to flee. Or if it's the Sabbath, where they were commanded under the old law to only go so far on the Sabbath, it would be hard to flee. See, all in this context is giving things that indicate this is not the end of the world or some premillennial fantasy. This is Rome, army, Gentiles coming against Jerusalem. Pray that there are not things hindering you, because you're going to need to be swift to get out of there. When we see this context, it's very clearly identified by the things that he describes. Now, as we go on in this context, we see that he warns against various false prophets and stuff again. Look down at verse 22. We'll pick up from there. Well, verse 21. "For then shall be great tribulation, such as hath not been from the beginning of the world until now, no, nor shall ever be. And except those days had been shortened, no flesh would have been saved. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. Then if any man shall say unto you, Lo, here's the Christ, or here, believe it not." There would be some presenting themselves as a Messiah. He says, don't you believe it. Don't you listen to that. "For there shall arise false Christs and false prophets, and shall show great signs and wonders, so as to lead astray, if possible, even the elect. And I've read of one fellow during this time period named Bar Kochba, son of the Star. And he even claimed that at his word, the walls of Jerusalem would fall down. Now, I don't know why a man who claimed to be a Christ would say the walls of Jerusalem would fall down. I don't see why he would be saying that kind of thing if he was on the side of the Jews. Doesn't make sense to me. But that's what one person claimed during that time period. Verse 25, "Behold, I have told you beforehand, if therefore they shall say unto you, Behold, he is in the wilderness, go not forth. Behold, he is in the inner chambers, believe it not. For as the lightning cometh from the east, and is seen even to the west." Notice this. Can you miss that lightning when it's down over the east? You see that light flashing all across the sky. He says, in this manner, so shall be the coming of the Son of Man. Wheresoever the carcass is, there will the eagles be gathered together. Now, as we look at this kind of a statement, he's saying, my coming in this context is coming upon Jerusalem, upon the temple there. Destroy that. It's not going to be some hidden thing, some secret coming. It's not going to be, well, he's over here and only a few of us are going to hear about it. This is going to be a judgment that's done openly. Now, this is not an actual physical coming of the Lord, but it's His coming in judgment. And in verse 28, notice the phrase, wheresoever the carcass is, there will the eagles be gathered together. Eagles. Did you know that on the banners of the Roman Empire were eagles? And so some make the connection that this is the Roman armies coming. Some simply make the idea of, well, there's a carcass, there's the body, and they're going to tear into it. And so some make it just that simple comparison. But these kinds of things are illustrating what we're talking about, this conflict that's coming upon Jerusalem. Now we see in verse 29, he says, but immediately after the tribulation of those days. Now notice that. Something's been done and completed. After that now, there's some things that are connected with it, but after it nonetheless. But immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun shall be darkened and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from the heaven, and the powers of the heavens shall be shaken. And then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven. Then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he shall send forth his angels with a great sound of a trumpet, and they shall gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. Now some will look at this and they say, well see, he's talking about the end of the world there. Well, is he? When you look at this idea of the sun and the moon being darkened and the stars being pulled down, if you will, we can note a number of passages. I just put two up here. There's a mentioning of Egypt and there's a mentioning of Babylon where he talks about he's going to cover the stars and he's going to hide the sun and the moon. They're going to be darkened during these times of judgment upon these various nations. These passages are not talking about the end of the world. And I don't believe in this context that Matthew 24 is talking about the end of the world. I think he's talking about great upheavals of governments. Great tossing up and turning over of powers and nations being changed and affected in dramatic fashion. That's what this figurative language is talking about. It's judgment, yes, but it's not the final judgment in this context. Now, there are some passages that use this kind of language in the context of different judgments. And so we can find a number of passages. We can look in the book of Revelation and find a number of passages with a similar kind of phrase. But it's talking about changes in government, great upheavals. He also says, you shall see the Son of Man in the clouds. And some would take this, like in that Left Behind series, that book series written by a denominational person. I forget the name. But in that, he has this one scene where you have this sign appearing in the sky that everybody sees. And that's an indication that he's coming real soon. And there are people who take this passage in that kind of context and that kind of thinking. But in this context, what's he talking about? These things that are happening, these great upheavals, these problems, that is what he's talking about. There's not going to be a cross that appears and glowing in the sky, like some people write about. There's not going to be something like that. There's going to be the things that he's predicted coming about. These events for the reasons that he's talked about. When you read about the Son of Man in the clouds, We know a number of passages in the Scripture that identify judgment. In Isaiah 19 and Ezekiel 30, both of those passages, for example, are judgments on various nations. And it talks about how it's going to be a time of clouds, or that God is going to come with a cloud. Those were judgments in time. The idea of a cloud might be in the sense of an army coming, stirring up the dust behind it. Or there are various visions of God and His glory and His might and His power, and clouds were around Him. And so there's a sense of His majesty and power in connection with His presence. And so there's various contexts in which we see clouds associated with God. And we also see in this context of Matthew 24 Matthew 24, down in verse 32. He says this parable. Now from the fig tree learn her parable. When her branches now become tender and putteth forth its leaves, you know that the summer is nigh. Here you can see a fig tree in that land. He puts forth its leaves. It starts to bud. Well, what time of year is it? Well, we can understand that. We understand that when our plants start to bud forth that, well, it must be about that time of year. Spring's coming. We can tell. Those plants are on a plan that God has orchestrated and arranged in them. And they automatically do these things. That's an indicator of what's coming. And so He's connecting that here. He says in verse 33, even so ye also, when you see all these things, what did He say? What are the signs? All these things that He's talked about. Know ye that He is nigh, even at the door. Now notice verse 34. This puts the seal, if you will, on what He's talked about up to this point. Verily I say unto you, this generation shall not pass away till all these things be accomplished. And so what we need to realize is, this generation, the one we're living in today, right? Believe it or not, I've heard people preach that. You turn on the radio and find people reading this passage and say, see, this generation, Jesus spoke of this generation, the one we're living in. Well, wasn't Jesus speaking to somebody about 2,000 years ago? And if He meant some generation other than this, the present tense, when He was speaking, He sure wasn't very clear, was it? What this generation could it possibly be other than the one He was living in and the people He was speaking to? This generation, He said to those who were listening, this generation shall not pass away till all these things are accomplished. Yet people want to take this out of context and apply it today and rub it up, stir it up. But Jesus said that generation He was in was the one in which these things would take place. And so that, if you will, seals up, wraps this up in a nice gift wrap package and tells us up to this point the things that He's talked about. False Christ, sun and moon darkened, sign of the Son of Man, holy place being defiled, abomination, desolation, all those things. End of the world? Premillennialism? No. Fall of Jerusalem. Destruction of the temple. Fleeing from Judea. That's the context of what we see up to this point. And so that's what we need to apply it to. What we've seen up to this point in this passage is the destruction of Jerusalem. God's judgment upon that generation for their rejection of the Christ. Now we see from this point on, Jesus begins to answer the third question. What shall be the sign of the end of the world? Now notice in Matthew chapter 24 and verse 35. After He said, this generation shall not pass away till all these things shall be accomplished. Verse 35, He changes gears. Heaven and earth shall pass away. What's He talking about now? Fall of Jerusalem only? No, He's shifted gears. He's been talking about the destruction of Jerusalem and the fall of Judea, but now He's talking about heaven and earth shall pass away, but My words shall not pass away. Verse 36, but of that day, well, what days He just mentioned? Heaven and earth passing away. Of that day, He says, and hour knoweth no one, not even the angels of heaven, neither the Son, but the Father only. Are there going to be signs and warnings and premonitions of the fall, of the end of the world? People say that left and right. Every time, as we mentioned before, wars and rumors of war, famines and conflicts across the earth. Oh, it's getting close. Jesus said, the end of the world? Only the Father knows. No one else knows. Therefore, what man upon the face of the earth has the audacity to claim that they know the things that only the Father knows and that the Father has not revealed? Well, you can go back to Livingston where I used to preach. There was a fellow that came on the radio after me. He used to preach on a regular basis that, well, he was born in 1945 and that was the year that the Jewish nation was established, current Jewish nation, and so he knows that he's going to see in his lifetime the coming Christ. In his lifetime it's going to happen. All these things are going to be fulfilled. And he just knew it. Every little thing that took place, oh, here it comes. But he's as wrong can be. Because God said, you're not going to know. Jesus said, you're not going to know. Only the Father. Now notice in chapter 24, in verse 37, he makes a comparison. And as were the days of Noah, so shall be the coming of the Son of Man. Well, what was it like in the days of Noah? Well, he knew there was a coming judgment. But what did he not know? What did he not know? What did the world not know? Even though they saw Noah building the ark, and they heard Noah preaching for those 120 years, they didn't know the day nor the hour when the flood would come. That's what they didn't know. He goes on in this context, as were the days of Noah, so shall be the coming of the Son of Man. For as in those days which were before the flood, they were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and they knew not until the flood came and took them all away, so shall be the coming of the Son of Man. They were going through their normal walks of life. They get up, eat breakfast, went to work, did their thing, married. There were weddings probably taking place that very day. And people were thinking, oh, I've got my whole life before me. I've just got a bride. And look at all these things out here. And their life was gone that day. You know, we get up, we go through our days. And very often, we probably don't even think. And consider, how much time do we have? We just think, take it for granted. Well, here's another day, here's another time, and here's things I got to do, and this is going to be my whole week, this is going to be next week. And we have all these things planned out. We always need to remember as we pray, thanking God for each day. Thanking God for each opportunity. Now, he says the coming, the final coming, the judgment upon the world is going to be like in the days of Noah. People just doing their thing. He goes on to talk about, in verse 40, then shall two men be in the field, one is taken and the other left. Now notice, if it was a physical judgment upon, for example, Jerusalem, and an army came through, are they just going to take one person and leave another? No, they take everybody in their path. This is not Jerusalem anymore. This is the final coming. There are some who are righteous. Those will be taken. Those who are not righteous, they're not going to heaven. So some are taken, some are not. He goes on in verse 42, or verse 41. Two women shall be grinding at the mill. One is taken, one is left. Watch therefore, for you know not on what day your Lord cometh. You don't know the day. You don't know the time. You need to be ready. I need to be ready. Watch. Be careful. Be attentive. As he goes on in this context, verse 43. But know this, that if the master of the house had known in what watch or what hour the thief was coming, he would have watched and would not have suffered his house to be broken through. A thief does not announce when he's coming. You know, they don't have the courtesy of putting a sticky note on your door and saying, Saturday at 5 p.m., I'm coming to your house. Be sure to be out watching a movie. And leave your door unlocked. Make it easy. They don't do that. They wait. And they're sneaky. They might case you out a little bit, see what your patterns are, and know if you're going to work or you're going out somewhere, going on a trip, and then they come and they get in. At an hour that you're not expecting. But what do we do regarding things? Well, we try to be careful. We sit here and we put locks on our doors. And some people put alarms in their houses. And we try not to advertise things to draw their interest. And we do various things so as to help discourage and prevent that. But the Lord said, the judgment, when I come to judge the earth, you don't know the time. And so what do we need to do? Just like with the thief, we need to be prepared. He's not saying that he's a thief, but he's coming as a thief. as a thief, when a time we don't expect.
As we look at this context, verse 44, before we conclude. Therefore, be ye also ready, for in an hour that you think not, the Son of Man cometh.
When we look at this, we've seen two judgments. We've seen Matthew 24, verses 1 through 34, very clearly identifying the fall of Jerusalem, the fall of the temple, destruction in the land of Judea. Flee, get out of there. Signs, warnings connected with this. We've also seen Matthew 24, 35 and following. We stopped at verse 44, but you go on into chapter 25 talking about the second coming, the final coming of the Lord, judgment upon the world, the end of the world. But in doing this, Jesus has answered the questions of the disciples. He's answered their questions. And He's identified two distinct judgments. And our question, of course, is, are we ready? Are we ready? You know, we sing songs about being ready. And we talk about things in our Bible class study. We give illustrations of the very people who were not ready. In fact, you go on, Matthew 24 and 25, you have the parable of the 10 virgins, the parable of the talents, talking about the need to be ready. But the bottom line is, we can talk about it till we're blue in the face. Are we ready today? Tonight? If the Lord came at this very moment, is there something in our lives that we would say, I'm not ready yet. Give me just another minute. Would we say that? Why would we ever need another minute? If there's ever a moment when we have a doubt or a concern about our relationship with God, we can take the moment and serve the Lord. Correct our lives. If it's that we haven't become a Christian yet, then you have an opportunity this evening. You have an opportunity to obey the gospel and have your soul cleansed of every stain. But if you have obeyed the gospel and find that you've not been ready, you've not been vigilant, you've not been keeping yourself from sin, and not been living in the way that God wants you to, there's going to be a time when the Lord comes. And ready or not, He'll be there. And our life will be before Him in judgment. But we can be prepared. If you are an erring Christian this evening, you can repent of your sins and come back to Him. And He will receive you. And He will lift you up. And He will strengthen you through His Word. Why not come while we stand and while we sing?